watch me to give this event on the beginnings of our society and some of the early on the road. I was really viewed this because we talked about this thing, the sunrise of life. Of course, now I'm holding time, of course, it's all very well for me. I like the romance. A lot of the younger members here, I thought that it might be a little bit of a tedious job, so I'll just try and keep it as mobile as I can, and I'll keep the watch on this guy, go for about half an hour, and then we'll have some of the old slides. I'm going to try and get back in the 1950s. And tell us probably if we came in. Now, as we decided at the beginning, we've got to go back to our club to the early days, and I'm afraid we can go back to about 1901, which is the start of a brand new century, when the Royal Australasian or the College of Union was formed. It was not Royal in those days, it came later on. It was the AOU in those days. I thought I was born then. But it's had a wonderful, it's a wonderful experience to be a member of the society based on 50 years. It's changed a lot in that time. In 1901, when we were formed, we had men like Surgeon General, Sir Charles Ryan, we had men like Captain F.A. Wright from South Australia, who wrote a most fascinating story that I read in my very early days, the most extensive ornithological journey ever undertaken. You can read it in the Indian, kind of fascinating. What is humorous about that is there's a black and white photograph there of crossing the Flooded River. And the cars in those days, of course, there was no ranch driving, they just had to break their way through. And I remember this picture of across the Flooded Street. They took the cars and everything. The hoofs went off, the rain boards went off, mudguards went off, everything to put his clothes on went off. And the photograph shows a man from about there, not again, just from there above, hanging on to a steering wheel. And everything else is underwater. That's the way we crossed it, that is it. And that's Captain F.A. White's story, and Dr. W.D. Hayden Gillibrand. And then he showed from Broken Hill. And he had a marvelous story in those early days, to about Chicken Land. That published in the early days, too, Colonel W.D. Mayer. He was the first president of the Royal Australian Ornithologist Union. He wrote a book on the birds of Samoa. And then migrated to Tasmania and became the first president in 1901. We had Archie J. Campbell and we had Archie D. Campbell. That was father and son, the only father and son that ever became both presidents of the Union. Archie Campbell in 1900 wrote that glorious few volumes on an ethnic Australian president. Now these little men, Jay Aldrich was another one who wrote that book on the Australian bird book. These were all men before my time, but their fame carried on. If I want to talk about the men that I knew, well, we've got to come down quite a few years now. And at any rate, at the end of the last century, ornithology, field ornithology, as we know it today, is tackling on existence. It had no subject. But in 1908, the Royal Australian Union, the Royal Australian Ornithologist Union, RAU, I'll call it for short, began to think, well, we're going to have a secretary's retreat, so branch secretaries were inaugurated, and it was taken represented on the council that way. I was Grand Secretary for 18 years. That was a much later time in history, of course. And in 1922, the Royal Ornithological Society of New South Wales decided to break their society up into different groups, and they became an ornithological section in that year. So when that happened, the ornithological section of the Royal Ornithological Society of New South Wales amalgamated with the New South Wales branch of the Royal Ornithologist Union. Now, that is a big mouthful, but as Peter said, I think I must have said that quite a few hundred times during that 18 years on the state secretary, because in those days the minutes were read out of the meeting. We had minutes from the parlor. I've got a note here that I've got a continuous set of the 5 minutes of every monthly meeting from November 1935 to May 1970 when they were discontinued. A very remarkable step for that. And I can tell you, if you read through some of those minutes, there's lots of passages of Hume and lots of passages that are quite different. An article there that said in one case that the membership was 35. That was combined for tonight. There was only 35 members in every way there. But during that year, it increased to 46, and you can see it was growing even in those days. There's another record there where they had an album. 9 members attended the album. 3 very successful albums, instead of what? 9 members attended, and they saw 34 speeches there. And I've got a record there, and one of the minutes from Michael Sharman, and he was a well-equipped ornithologist. He spent a day up on Hawk Creek, came back with a list of 36 species of the world. I thought Coleman would eat your heart out, didn't he? But these are the things that you read in those early minutes. Now, I don't want to give very much on history. I just want to mention that, I think I've got it written down here, because thanks from all always going to remember. And RAU Grand Secretary ended in 1968, the new order of the RAU started in 1969, and during there was a very bad backlog of the year, Steve Martin took over the editorship, and in 6 months he managed to bring out 4 issues of the year, and that was a remarkable achievement, of course, no matter what the date. I've mentioned quite a few names down here. I know I didn't even mention them all, but one thing I do want to say, right in my very early days, when I was a budding ornithologist, I suppose that's the best way to put it, and I had a very keen interest and very little opportunity. I managed to gather together an ornithological library, of course. There wasn't many books in those days. And I got a fascination when I was in my mid-20s, I suppose, a fascination then to, or late-20s, to be better to say, to meet the 3 C's. Now, that sounds funny, because I admired men with the surname of C for the work that they've done in college, and I thought at the time that I may never meet these men. But they were well known, see. I ranked Neville Paley as supreme, and I still think he's one of the greatest bird painters of all time. Some of his work is one of the few seen those beautiful pieces of art that Angus and Robertson had down there, which they showed me on one occasion many years ago. They were beautiful. And that was what was to be the tapes to be used in every big bird book. Now, that was the only name in the same way. You know what bird is that for. And then that was only done in a very big hurry. That was a preliminary. With the big bird book, and the big bird book never mentioned. That I was Neville Paley was my great hope that one day I might know this man because of his wonderful artistry. And of course I came very much to Norman Chapper, another kid. And I admire him. I still think Norman Chapper is a photographer supreme. He's 84 years of age today, and strangely enough, Norman is writing his first book, getting some help on the Bower version, which is a wonderful subject. And Norman is still going around at 84, and he was a man in my young days that I admired. In fact, he was one of the first of these 3 men I managed to meet. The other one, of course, was Alex Chisholm, the first scene. And of course, I admired Alex Chisholm for his journalism, for his wonderful books. I had makeshift of birds, I had birds in green places. I had birds under the Australia. 3 wonderful books that I had there. And I was very proud of having those 3 books that I was given. And I always thought, I wonder when I meet these 3 men, I'm going to tell you. And of course, I got to know the 3 of them extremely well. Which I'm very happy to say. The last time I ever spoke to Neville Paley was just before he had stroke. He died hopelessly too young. And in that he was, oh, hanging with this big bird book. And he asked me then, he said, you've written half a dozen articles in the evening on the Raiders, and said, I want you, if you're willing, to take over the whole of the Raiders section of the Big Bird book, because I know nothing about Raiders. And of course, I thought that at the time, about 1945, was a terrific honor. And of course, these were the 3 C's that I admired. And strangely enough, my life progressed on a little bit different way. I've seen other men hanging in my life, and I think
I learned far more from ornithology from the other thing in the pattern of the last year. No, it wasn't immediately. Pete Pinewood, who was a marvellous man. And of course I became a very, very closely associated with Pete Pinewood. And of course we wrote a couple of books together. We wrote those papers, What Bird Is That? And we also wrote The Birds of Sydney. We wrote all the papers together, and of course we always exchanged papers that we were writing. The Pete Pinewood became a marvellous companion. Another man that I got to regard very highly, and that was Charlie Bryant. Charlie Bryant, the editor of the Evening for 31 years. That's a record that will never be broken. I was assistant at the Evening for 21 years, but I think that will never be broken. Because now, as a fall, you can't hold that office longer than 20 years. After 31 years, Charlie Bryant steered the India through, and for most of that time, I was his assistant. I know, it came about a strange, I was going to tell you the third man, that was Alan Keats. Keats didn't make a lot. Alan Keats, of course, he's tuned in today, so I saw him at Java, that was a pass on. And Alan Keats, of course, became very, very important. Now, these were the three men that shaped my ornithological life far more than the three, well not far more, but slightly more, than the three students that I admired in those very early days. I joined the union in 1941. Actually, I met Norman Chapman in 1937 when he came to give a talk, and I was giving a talk and he was feeding his side. That was our first work together, and that was a wonderful meeting. Before that, I gave quite a few addresses on birds, so I was very green at the subject. Frank Clark was my companion in those days. I don't think many will know much about Frank Clark. Frank Clark was a man that won the bird call competition of the Jewel League, I think some about 7 years in succession, and nobody could stop him. That's why I was quite a stroke of good fortune. I ran into Frank Clark on one occasion, found out we both interested in birds, so we became quite a team for many years. Almost all my early days spent at the Royal Zoologist Cavern in the National Park was with Frank. He was a marvelous companion. He again died at a very early age. But as a bird caller, he was supreme. I know we've got Ernie Hoffman in this, and we've got managed to give some remarkable imitation of bird call. But I still reckon Frank Clark was number one. It's marvelous. Well, Frank took me into those early meetings of the Royal Zoological Society where I met 200. I never really got to know him in those days. I got 34, 1935. 1937, I said, Norman Chapman gave an illustrated illustration to my talk, collected a reading out of an object, and then he said, why don't you join the union? I said, well, that's exactly what I want. I didn't know much about the Royal Australasian Ornithology Union, and he was just some laughable opportunity that he found on my lap. He said, I'll nominate, I'll be happy to do it. He said, I said, oh, now where do you meet? He said, Bull's Chambers. That was the meeting place in those days, 28 Martin Place, and you left that. That was the office of the Royal Zoological Society. And I said, what night? He said, Friday night. I said, come now. He said, I work Friday night. It was a terrible blow. I said, why not another night? So it took a war to change that. In 1941, the war came away with late shopping nights, so I was released. I joined the union immediately. 3 years after I became a state secretary in other states in India. So that was just opportunities that came to me. And in 1943, Norman Shuffle asked me would I accompany him, Jack Ramsey, another wonderful man, and Roy Cooper, another wonderful. They were planning this trip to an early water course. They asked me would I come. Well, that was the opportunity that I hope might happen to me one day. So I went for that 3 weeks. Up there. It wasn't easy. There was four men. We had camping gear for four men. We had breakfast for four men. We had all the photographic gear because these three other men were both all motor photographers. And somehow or other we packed that into a Ford motor car and there was no petrol. We had to carry a charcoal burner behind us, a big trailer, and we couldn't use the boots because we had to be filling up with three bags of charcoal. So That's the way we bring them all in. And three men in the front seat, and one chap, Roy Cooper, and I wrote paper because Jack Brown was a bit too old for us to sit in the back seat. So Roy Cooper and I wrote paper. We stopped, and we somehow managed to get a space about that. Go ahead at the back, one of us was sitting. Remarkable trip. But after I came back, and I said, I'm the only non-photographer of the group here, I said, I'll write a story. I took a shot in charge. I said, well, I haven't written many stories. I published a few articles in the Union. I said, Charlie Bryant's a pretty tough man, they told me. And I said, I'll put it together and see what happens. So I wrote the story up. Roy Cooper and Norman gave me three beautiful photographs. So that's an awful thing. But my heart is over Charlie Bryant, and I'm almost so sure if they are not suitable for the Union, forget about it. But the reply I got back started this way. I never forget reading that letter, and it started like this. Sure, you're a phenomenal boy. Sure, you're a phenomenal boy. What a wonderful life. And then he went on to tell me that he was making up the Union when my article arrived, and he didn't have enough material. And he didn't have any photographs. And he said, your article came at the psychological moment that I was hoping for something like that. When it went in the Union, and a month later I got a request from Charlie Bryant, would I think of becoming assistant editor of the Union? Remarkable event, it all happened so suddenly. And here was our quite young ornithologist. And there's these opportunities just need to come. Well, anyway, that's some of the early stuff, things like that. I would like to tell you a lot about Chief Highland. Ernie Hodgson is very fine. He brought in some of these old black and white photographs. I'd love to be able to screen them, really. The old black and white photographs that Chief took in those days. They're all fascinating. They all recall some wonderful event. They picture some bird, some event on earth. Remember, photography, bird photography is only recent. You know, in years, I mean, at the start of the century, there's probably you could count on one hand the number of people that were taking photographs. And if anybody came out from England, it was a world photographer, well, there was a red carpet waiting down for information photographer. It shows the progress of photography. Back in 1900, which I'll show you tonight, my photograph number one, first one I took, that was back about 1954, I've been going pretty well, but I'm not a photographer. You'll have to bear with me. Some of these photographs are now becoming a little bit historic as well. Because 1954, the war ended in 1945. It was probably about 1950 before things settled down again. Certainly, petrol rationing didn't go off for 1950. And a lot of other rationing didn't go off for them. Of course, colour photography was just a new toy. So, of course, we know now you sit here night after night and see these beautiful photographs. And of course, we've got to only think that after all, it's only 40 years ago, that would be impossible. So, I'll be showing some of those very shortly. I've just got to keep my eye on them, but I'm still going quite a way. Now, I want to mention a few of these other men. I mentioned quite a few. One I want to mention very, very particularly is our present chairman of the Knights grandfather, J.E. Roberts. We always knew Ted Roberts at under six. And the work that this man done is simply remarkable. You've got no idea. He was secretary, treasurer, and editor of the Guru League for quite a number of years. He had to keep in touch with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of students. He brought out that Guru League note, which was a marvel of the publication. I've got to talk that, and that was a wonderful publication of the doings of the Guru League. He done all this, and he arranged a concert every year in the Assembly Hall. In bird call competitions, I judged there for 3 or 4 years. I was caught up very much with the work of J.E. Roberts, marvelous man with interest. And then, of course, I've got a lot of other names mentioned down here. Roy Cooper, I said I went away with Jack Ramsey and Roy Cooper. I mentioned Norman Jabber, who, of course, is still with us. Jack Ramsey died at a very old age. Jack Ramsey was a pioneer photographer. He was one of the very first to start off photographing birds. Some of his early photographs, I think, will still stand comparison with any black and white photograph taken of birds at any age. And then Roy Cooper was a marvelous photographer. Roy Cooper was a lovely chap to know. And I have a lot of trips alone of Roy. He died quite early too. And he was years younger than me. He was the youngest of that party in that affair. So, I mean, he was a marvelous man, kind of lost for all authority in those early years. We've got men like Mike Charlotte. Mike Charlotte's still living, he's 84 too. He writes a letter to frequently from Tasmania. Mike has a record that nobody will ever beat. He's contributed for over 50 years a weekly article for the Hobart Mercury. What an achievement. Mike Charlton, a delightful man. Mike was there one time, secretary here, I've never played it, our secretary when the branch was originally formed and so on. We've got men like that. Norm Tadalora. Still living, same age as myself, down in New York. Norm has been a benefactor of the Royal Australian Law Authority. All these men at one time or other served as presidents of the Royal Australian Law Authority Union. Don Preventi, I mustn't forget Don, because Don gave me that great opportunity in 1948 to spend 3 weeks down in the Bass Strait Islands doing a band in Muttonburg. It's one of the great experiences of my life. Don was a wonderful companion. 2 years older than myself, still living out in Western Australia. Hubert Massey would tell, amazing the army. Hubert Massey would tell them, very fine gentleman, a perfect English gentleman. And he set about to bring about that great literature, that book on the literature or bibliography of Australian ornithology. A remarkable achievement. Sadly enough, he died just before it was published. I was doing the 50-year index for the EU at the same time. They were contacting very closely because our work was running parallel. And he said, it's going to be interesting, Owen, to see whether your 50-year index and my bibliography comes out first. We're running neck and neck. Well, his bibliography just happened a little bit before, and unfortunately, I lived to see my work, and I've done 30 years working with him since then. And knew that Nancy was our guy just before his work came out. Marvelous man. I had Cassidy was one of the pioneers of seabird ornithology. He's done a tremendous amount on the island around Australia. There was Swiss, Arthur was Swiss in Sydney, and Dudley was Swiss in Melbourne. Dudley, of course. There were only two team of brothers that ever became president. One was Dudley the Swiss and Arthur the Swiss, Sydney and Melbourne, and the other two were the Barnards up in Queensland. Charlie A. Barnard and Harry Greenfield Barnard. They both became presidents, and they done a tremendous amount of pioneer photography. Two sets of brothers and one father and son have become presidents. I must mention John Neil McGill. It's interesting because there's only one letter difference in his name and phonograph. John Neil McGill, he lived out at Lake Strome in South Australia. I met Neil McGill only on one occasion, and that was when I was president during the years 1958-1959, and when I handed over the Ray Little Johns, who succeeded me as president in South Australia in 1959, Ian McGregor was in the audience. And it was a wonderful occasion that we corresponded, we thought we'd never know each other, much older than I was, and it was an opportunity to know this man. He'd done a lot of tremendous, wonderful work from his articles in the early days of the EU was wonderful. I mustn't forget Tom Lardass in our museum. I've got to leave out some members here, there's not enough time. Tom Lardass was a wonderful help. He was a conchologist at the Australian Museum, but Tom knew his birds, there's no doubt about that. He was a marvelous ornithologist as well. He was Gregory, he made the bullets and Gregory Matthews fired them. I always said that. Tom Lardass on the failure and Gregory Matthews got the patent. I must mention Gregory Matthews, he was an unusual fellow. I knew him for about 3 years. He lived in England, but in 1942 London got a very bad shaking, and Gregory thought Australia was a much safer place, so he migrated back to Australia, he's on that. And he was here at our monthly meetings for a couple of years. He was an unusual fellow. Very hard to describe Gregory Matthews. You can read his 12-volume portfolio, what a magnificent bit of work. But to know Gregory was a different thing altogether. He wore a monocle, he was a very aristocratic. My first spoken word to Gregory was, I was looking at some pins, like this, pins out on the table, and I was looking at him as a young ornithologist. And Debbie came along, tapped him on the shoulder, and says, "Young fellow, what's the name of that bird you're looking at?" And I said, "Oh my God. You're asking me, and you haven't told me what you're saying, it didn't seem real, did it?" But that was his attitude, young fellow. "What is the name of that bird?" "Oh," he said, "I was only testing you, that's all." And of course, you've got some wonderful memories of these men. Tom Iredale, I think, done the spade work. And Gregory Matthews, of course, done it. It's nice to know him anyway. They passed on long ago. Archie G. Campbell, I never knew Archie J.'s father, he was passed on before my time. And Archie G. was the delightful fellow. I was looking at the 1951 Jubilee pamphlet in Hatton. In 1951, the Union became 50 years of age and had to be celebrated in Victoria. And with Jim Palmer was here tonight, I said to Jim, "We spotted that old car of Jim's all the way down to Hatton. Got a broken axe in the job, but we arrived there in time." And Archie G. Campbell was one of the members, and I had 2 days over Archie G. for the marvelous chef. Lovely to have met him like that. I've got to wrap this time because I'm going to show a few slides. And I just want to leave the last half hour talk, I promise, and half hour slide. Even with that early day, I don't know if you can hear some of the notes that were taken for some of these minutes. And even in those early days, when I only had a membership of about 34, they were pretty ambiguous, because you read in that where the Christmas party was to be held in the ballroom of Lock and Turvey. Anybody remember the ballroom of Lock and Turvey in Sydney? 35 members, yes, they held a Christmas party in a ballroom. Quite an ambitious enterprise, I would imagine. At any rate, our club, as you know it here, started at the Goolie Bird Watchers in July 1966. Peter Roberts was the editor, Laurie Haynes was the secretary, and Laurie Haynes soon took over the editorship, and that carried on until Volume 5, Number 2 started. It was a continuation from the little journal called Bird, which became Australian Bird. It continued on the volume and the page numbers, so that was the beginning of our society. And in June, and Volume 5, Number 2, which came out on July the 21st, 1970, George Dibley became the president. We all know George, a marvellous man of name. He was our first president of the New South Wales FOC. Laurie Haynes became the editor and Lowell Smith the secretary. And from that on, we have met as the New South Wales Field Ornithologist Club. And in those early days, it was the Royal Australian, the Royal Zoological Society of New South Wales had to be choir, had to be the senior club, and the New South Wales branch of the Royal Ornithologist Union. I quite those minutes many times, and I read it out of any time as Peter mentioned in the opening of that day. Wonderful. That is the beginning of our club. We met first at the Australian Museum, that was back before my time. And then we went to the RZS office and did change 28 Martin Place, and that's where we had our monthly meetings for a long time, when the office shifted to the Royal Zoological Taronga Park, the Royal Taronga Zoo. Then, of course, we met in Anzac House. For some years we met in Anzac House, other members will remember that house, and then we came back to the Australian Museum again. And that's the way it grew from that very small beginning back in 1922 when the two societies amalgamated and monthly meetings have been held ever since, with probably a few exceptions, of course. Now that is just some of the... Listen, I know I've let down a lot of names here, but it doesn't matter. I've mentioned a lot of people. I should say, I suppose, W.B. Alexander. Anybody got Alexander's book on the birds of the ocean? It was quite an achievement to get a book like that. It was the first book that I know that was written on the birds of the ocean. But W.B. Alexander was an interesting fellow in so many ways. He had a brother in England, and that brother's still living in England. He's 98 years of age. I've got one that he's just written a book recently. I've got his book. So there again, the knowledge of one person leads to another. And that is the way that society is going. Now I think I've just about reached my half hour up, if I can have the lights out, Peter, and show a few slides.